Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Coco Express, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your host on the Coco Express is Aurelia Lyles. She's all about keeping it real. Great guests, interesting topics, so get on board. Listen, learn, live.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good afternoon and happy new year to everyone. It's Saturday, January 5th, 2013, and it's time for us to get the ball rolling on this new year. On today's show, we're going to be discussing overcoming obstacles and adversity with author and entrepreneur Mr. Ron McElroy. Mr. McElroy wrote a very, very interesting book titled Wrong Side of the Tracks. This book really had me doing a lot of soul searching and thinking on my own. Mr. McElroy was born to poverty in Southern California. He survived a family that battled mental illness, drug abuse, and some other issues. His story is a story of learning how to read the various class codes and understand them and interact successfully with them. His story is a story of understanding your basic foundation, understanding who you are and where you come from and how important that is. But how did he become so successful, and what were the key turning points in his life? Who were the people who were instrumental in his success? These are questions that we're going to ask and explore with Mr. McElroy. So please allow me the opportunity to introduce to you Mr. Ron McElroy. Hello.
Hi. How are you? Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, thank you for joining us. I mean, it's an honor and a pleasure. I have to tell you that I really enjoyed reading your book.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yes. And what's so interesting about your book is the way that you detailed your experience, you know, your various experiences, how you talk about your childhood, and you also talk about your foundation and how it got you to where you are right now. Now, can you just kind of like give us a little bit of detail about who you are?
I guess the first place to start is, you know, I ended up getting to where I am from, I think, a lot of, you know, internal battles, and that was, you know, early on growing up. A lot of things did not make sense. I had quite a bit of reflection, even as a small child, of trying to reconcile why things don't make sense. And there were a number of things that just did not make sense. You know, grew up kind of religious, and there were a lot of things about religion that didn't make sense to me, even at an age of 5 or 6 years old, going to Sunday school. Obviously, when you grow up in a difficult circumstance and you're not used to anything else, it doesn't seem strange. But as you get older, it starts to not feel good, I think, based on, you know, how you're able to compare what's happening in other circumstances with people that you meet, you know, your neighbors, people in your community. It just seems that they start to not make sense. So I guess one thing that I could say is, for some reason, I've always been had a very contemplative mind, and have always tried to figure out, you know, why certain things did not make sense, and not just, you know, accepting life the way it is, I guess.
Okay, I get that. I really do. It seems like at a young age you looked at things from a more logical perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I do understand that, because I kind of process things in that particular manner as well. But what was so interesting was one of the statements that you made in your book was how you and your siblings, you all come from the same parents and you all lived in the same household. However, each one of you went into several different directions. And that's something, that's a question that I often ask myself as well. How do you think, or why do you think that happened?
Yeah, and, you know, absolutely perplexing to me. Even in this, you know, late age and in life, it's something that you know, I kind of ponder quite a bit. You know, how can three siblings from almost an identical you know, environment end up in three completely different you know, results? And you know, there's a lot of things that absolutely go into it, which have to do with, you know, your chemical makeup and your biological makeup and everything behind that. But, you know, all my years of now raising children and going through quite a bit of life, it seems like an awful lot of it is, you know, your learned behavior, which comes from your environment around you, which typically is, you know, what affects you the most, I think, when you're growing up is your parents.
Mm-hmm.
And your relationship with your siblings. And that is something that, you know, from coaching my kids, you know, basketball teams, soccer teams, surfing with them, you know, since they were a small age, and just being involved with teams and kids and other parents, it becomes very clear that, you know, you can see how kids grow up with some inadequacies, and it's a direct effect of how they're treated by their parents, in my opinion. Mm. That's the way I see it. And I think an awful lot of either damage or great benefit is extolled upon these kids at an early age.
Okay, Rick, I'm going to kind of go into your book a little bit so people, my listeners, will have a better understanding. Your father, he battled mental illness pretty much most of his life.
Yes, that's correct.
And your mother, she is of Hawaiian descent, and she had a very strong religious belief and background.
Correct.
And your eldest brother, he battled drug abuse and mental illness as well.
That's correct.
And your sister, who was the middle child, she kind of got lost somewhere in there?
Yeah, she kind of got lost somewhere in there. She was just an absolutely adorable person, and I think it's a shock that, you know, she ended up going in the direction that she did. That's a difficult one for me, even to this day, to kind of come to grips with.
And in reading your book, I kind of saw how and why she might have gone in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because, you know, she loved family and wanted to belong.
Yeah. And, you know, again, a lot of things, you know, they just don't unravel and expose themselves until sometimes even, you know, 10, 20, 30 years later. And I had, you know, kind of, you know, pondered why she had taken this path to, you know, to go to the extreme of going to these Bible studies classes at an early age, at 19, 20 years old, when you're just really, you know, kind of open-eyed and trying to discover what life is all about and, you know, trying to set your course for you know, where you're going to go in your life. And she chose to go down this path of going to initially just going to these Bible studies courses, which, you know, everybody feels like is, hey, it's pretty innocent, it's pretty normal, you know, you want to find something meaningful in your life. And that progressed into eventually, you know, joining this cult. And, you know, a lot of things are dressed up pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
That don't allow, you know, parents and people, you know, loved ones to really see, you know, the long-term detriment of some of these groups and a lot of these cults. And so, as she spent more time in this cult, it eventually, you know, grabbed onto her, and soon after she was brainwashed to the point where, you know, us family members became what she had termed people of the world, and she no longer could have contact with people in the world. And that was a really, really difficult thing to deal with. And the only thing that I wish is that, you know, either my parents or us siblings, you know, had the wherewithal or the, you know, the state of mind. You know, we were all kind of screwed up in our own situations, but it's just a travesty that someone close to her didn't get it sooner and take the, you know, necessary steps to prevent, you know, that lifelong change in her life.
Okay. I see and I understand and I get that. You know, you are correct that sometimes things come in a pretty package, but once you take off the gift wrap and look inside, the package is not exactly what it looks like on the outside. And that I really understand, especially when it comes to, in, you know, religion. And, I mean, the media has played it out for us time and time again of all the things that could go wrong.
Right, right. Yeah, and it's, you know, if I think, you know, now how my relationship is with my kids is, you know, it's hard for me to understand how you would not see it. I think I feel like I'm so close to my kids that it would be almost impossible for me not to understand that something's not right, or well, whatever they're getting into is not, you know, the right thing. And even so, I mean, my my philosophy is that, you know, if you spend the right amount of time, you know, getting close to whether it's your kids or any relationship that you have, it's not difficult to see, you know, where the issues are. And I think that's the problem with you know, a lot of kids today, but certainly a lot more back in the day, where there just wasn't that connection that was, you know, that would give you the insight to things like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other part of the book, which was interesting, is your connections to different people and different classes. You say you were from the wrong side of the tracks, and you had the opportunity to spend a lot of time with more affluent people based on your athletic prowess. So how were you able to, because it's like learning or knowing a different language, how do you think you were able to communicate on that level, being that you felt that you were not on that level?
Well, you know, that's a fantastic question. And, you know, coming from the wrong side of the tracks is, I think, a number of people, I mean, a lot of people in a number of different situations or classes probably feel that way for different reasons. Like the hole that my sister had to fill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically, she had a hole that she didn't feel like she had, you know, what she envisioned as a family. And I think losing something that she thought was so precious, where the book kind of reveals a story about her pregnancy, I think it destroyed her so much that was the hole that she needed to fill. Similarly, the hole that I needed to fill was not coming from the wrong side of the tracks, not being from a family that couldn't figure it out, couldn't figure out how to bring the basic necessities, you know, to the table. And that was really the driving force, and I think every bit of, you know, effort that was channeled, you know, from my anger of not being really happy about my circumstances, about my family environment. I just, every bit of energy that I had was focused on removing these problems of being from the wrong side of the tracks, and mainly that the one was an economic disadvantage. And so I felt and I naturally gravitated towards towards people who seemed to me that they were in a much better spot in life than I was. And consequently I ended up meeting a number of people in my teens that were from the opposite side of the tracks.
And there was one in particular that really surprised me, and that was your, I guess you can say, your really good friend, Nicole.
Yeah, that was right. There is a little bit of that about the story of when we met, Nicole Brown Simpson, and fantastic, attraction to each other. I mean, really at a young age. I think she was actually 15 and I was 16. But, it was one of those puppy love attractions where we just seemed to gravitate towards each other and want to spend, a ton of time together. And for me, as much as I loved that, attraction and how it felt, it was great, and on the other side it was very difficult because I had grown up without any kind of direction or real, I think, understanding of what a relationship should be. So that was kind of the scary part of actually having a girlfriend. So having a relationship that would go deeper and blossom was not in the cards until, much later in my life. But we did a lot of a lot of things, and I think I was so attracted to her that I actually did a lot of things, towards that relationship that I would typically not do because I was so attracted to her. And that had to do with things like, going to her parents for dinner, which was a scary thing for me at that age, or going to, her parents', friends' parties so that, I could be introduced, as her friend. And, when you're a young kid who's kind of a rebel and kind of takes things into his own hands, that was not the typical thing that you'd prefer to do. So, yeah, and I've realized over a long period of time that, love can make you do a lot of things that you're not used to doing. And looking back, that was kind of that situation in a kind of a puppy love way.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was another love that you had, and that was your love of your cultural background, your foundation. You're part Hawaiian. And it must have been very difficult and interesting for you to be able to love that culture so much. And also, when you tried to merge your current culture with that culture, you had, conflict. Like, when you would go to Hawaii with your friends, it was in the book, and it was played out in the book really interestingly.
My cultural, my heritage, that background has always been extremely important to me. Having a real fondness for my mother and for her entire family on Hawaii and even a fair amount of family that's over here in the mainland. They're so oriented towards family and not just there to to throw a few dollars at when it's needed. It's just they're there in a very intimate way, whenever, however that you might need them, and that was really relevant at an extremely young age, and so that stuck with me for a long time, and still with me to this day, and my affection for that side of my heritage is is strong enough to the point where I feel like, you know, I feel an obligation to, you know, to give back and to try and, you know, do whatever I can to help my family, you know, kind of show some gratitude to some of the help that they had lent to me when I was growing up, and even in the later ages and teens and early 20s, you know, when there's a death in the family or something significant, they're always there to help or to give advice, and even later in age to be able to, you know, send my kids to live with and hang out with them and learn from them. It's been pretty precious for me.
Do you feel that knowing that you knew this at such an early age, that this was your saving grace, as you were growing up, that you knew, logically, you knew that you had a solid foundation that you could go to if you needed that?
Yeah. You know, I think there are a couple of things that were a really solid foundation for me. Is, you know, my mom was kind of the rock of Gibraltar. She was rock solid in terms of, you know, understanding that you always had someone there, and her family was that same way. There's an excerpt in the book that relates to when my sister finally got fed up enough with our family situation that and which was very odd for my sister because she's a very you know, very compliant, very, you know, this is a bit of a wallflower, just really kind of a shy gal. Never took a hard stand, and I think she must have been about 15 years old at that point, 14 or 15 years old, and she finally put her foot down with my mom and basically said that, you know, us three kids were moving to Hawaii, and she had already gone to, I think, the effort to, you know, to organize, you know, which kid would go with which auntie and uncle. So, you know, that was, it was pretty automatic that if you needed a place to fall on, that's where the three of us knew we could fall. And so what came out of that, you know, stand of her strength, in knowing that she had a backstop with all of these family members in Hawaii, was the impetus for my mom to put her foot down to finally make my father, you know, stop you know, being a chronic belligerent alcoholic. And it's interesting how those things work. You wish that, hey, why did it take this long? Why didn't you just, you know, summon up the, you know, the gumption to just, you know, to put your foot down regardless. And, you know, those are life's lessons. You just know, you don't know that you can do that unless you're pushed to, you know, to feel like that's your only way out, which, you know, which is sad. And a lot of people, you know, I think reading this book would kind of come away with that same, you know, interpretation of, you know, God, I've got these circumstances in my life. They're not great. They're not great for my kids. You know, should I take a stand? Or should I allow this to happen? And maybe it'll work itself out. Well, rarely does it ever work itself out. I think you probably know that. It's sometimes you just have to, you know, stand up and you know, state your position and be committed to change whatever is wrong in your life.
That is absolutely correct. And the other thing, I mean, it's just so many things that happened in your life that were detailed in the book, was really interesting how you would sometimes kind of fall back into a behavior that's just not conducive to you being successful, but then snap out of it. What was it that kept making you snap back?
You know what? That's really an interesting question, because that did happen quite a bit, and it just seems to always happen. you know, in different ways still. It's almost like, you know, when you grow up testing boundaries because you don't have any boundaries, you get used to that trial and error, and it almost, I think, feels comfortable, you know, having that, you know, hitting that edge of the envelope that alerts you to take a hard look at what you're doing and how far you're going, and does it make sense to go that far or to go farther or to scale it back. And I think that, you know, my passion even as a young child was, you know, how do I make my family better? How do I undo this weird, you know, family environment that I'm in? And so I think part of it was being so angry or let down that I would release my tension, you know, as it's released, as most people deal with that, or the way that most people release it, which is to act out, you know, to take drugs, to drink heavily, to do, you know, destructive things, and then realize that didn't really make sense, or that didn't really feel good, or you know, but as soon as that anger was released, or whatever that act served as to relinquish, you know, whatever anguish was broiling in my head, I'd come back to a point and just decide that this is not the direction that you need to go, you know, to get out of your situation or to make your situation better. You need to go this direction. And then so there'd be a serious, concerted effort to focus on driving out of this situation or this circumstance. And it would, and it typically, for me, at a younger age, it was sports. I would excel and beyond, you know, and I'm even amazed at how well I did in sports, and that was a lot of, you know, focus and release for my which could have been bad energy that was turned into good energy, and so that was kind of, you know, a lot of the lessons that I learned were growing up and having sports as my outlet and realizing that, okay, this seems to generate a better response or a better result. It feels better. It gets a better response, you know, from people in my community. It just is better. And then, you know how that works. Is certain things happen where, I don't know, your dad will be arrested in your community, and all your friends know it, or your parents get into a good fight, and it's an embarrassing thing. You know, it makes the you know, that productive path, it makes it hard to stay on that productive path.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I think you kids or anybody, you know, they have that spark to just lash out and go back.
That's good. Do you believe or feel that some of the prayers that your mom would say to you at night when you were in Hawaii had a lot to do with it?
You know, I can't help but think that, you know, I'm not really religious to this day. I believe that there's something up there, but have never been super religious, just because there's a lot of things that don't make sense. I believe that there's a God. There's something more powerful than us. But yes, I do. I mean, her basic energy, you know, to protect your kids. I don't know. It's I've had, you know, so many things in my life that seem like, you know, could have gone a much different direction, whether it be an accident, a physical accident, or just a luck of the turn. And I personally can't see how I could be that fortunate without some kind of influence, whether it's, you know, my mom's prayers or even my dad's looking back and having some sort of, you know, mystical, you know, protection over my life. It's hard to, you know, that whole metaphysical or the parasite of reality is an interesting to contemplate. But there's a lot of things in my life that haven't made sense in a good way later in life, for sure.
Now, where you are now, you are you're a real estate developer.
Yep.
And you are doing a lot of development in Hawaii and Mexico at this time, correct?
Yeah, have done a fair amount of stuff in Hawaii and a fair amount of stuff in Mexico, and we've got, you know, projects and other projects that we're in the early stages of right now. But yeah, a bit of influence in both those areas.
Now, having come from where you have been looking back and being where you are now, what would you say were the key turning points to getting there?
I've got to say I don't know that there's one single point, but I will say there have been some points in my life that have been, you know, kind of gotcha moments or kind of the bright lights come on. And one of them was, you know, just winning contests in surfing was kind of gave me that really a big burst of confidence. Because the way I grew up, even though I excelled at a lot of things, I had very little confidence. I mean, extremely low self-esteem, and it's almost embarrassing, you know, to admit that I had that kind of persona of internally about myself. But surfing was something that was very dear to me. It wasn't just a sport for me. It was something I just cherished greatly, and I think part of that, the reason why I cherished it so much, it was kind of my escape. I was able to, you know, be out in the ocean for hours at a time and just be away from all the grief and the mayhem, and it just felt really good. And consequently, I spent so much time in the water in my later teens that I just became a very good surfer, and started getting into competitions when I went to college on the college teams, and we ended up, you know, winning the league title at my university, which is UC Santa Barbara, and so that was a huge bit of confidence for me. The other huge, like, turning point in terms of my confidence and my ability to do something, you know, I think productive with my life was actually getting accepted to what I thought was a substantial university, which is UC Santa Barbara. And so being able to go to a great university, to be able to accomplish something as being a successful surfer. I mean, those two things combined, I can say were a huge turning point for me, just in confidence that, you know, God, I do have something, you know, that'll be meaningful and productive in my life.
Oh, interesting. And for you, would you say that your love for real estate is because real estate is logical?
You know, I think that's quite possible, because I had a quite a few jobs growing up, and I just didn't like working very much, and nothing, you know, was very, the right word isn't exciting, but it just didn't hold my attention, and it was definitely done just to, you know, provide a means to an end. And, you know, I had jobs with my sponsors that I had for surfing after I graduated from UCSB. I went to work for one of my sponsors, which was Offshore Clothing, which was a big clothing company at that time. And it could have been a very good job, but it just wasn't interesting for me to sell clothing. In that stage of my life, in that position I was in, it could have been something good. But the day I secured a job in commercial real estate, I think it was 1983, it felt like getting up in the morning to go surfing to me. It was exciting. It was I'd get up and, you know, get to the office by 6 o'clock in the morning and not leave till 6 or 7 in the evening. Wasn't difficult to do that. So that was the first job for me was, you know, so enthralling and grabbed my attention so much that it was easy to do, similar to going to college after not liking school all through high school and getting terrible grades, and all of a sudden having some kind of understanding what my purpose was and very easily going to college and getting good grades. Same thing with work. Work was not very interesting. When I found my passion, it was boom. All of a sudden, this is exciting. I love to do it, and I'll spend every waking hour that I have practicing my trade. It's interesting. Yeah.
Now, you are trying to help develop certain areas. Is this still that mindset of wanting to help people kind of find their way off that side of the track onto another side? Is that still instilled in you?
Yeah, it is. I think it's more, you know, I love doing things in kind of not difficult areas, but for instance, this project that I've got in Mexico, just south of Zihuatanejo, is very remote, very rural. It's you know, it's a piece of property that fronts a very good surf spot. So, you know, that's always been the draw for me. But one thing that has possessed me about actually dropping a footprint down there is the people in the area are just so gracious and generous and you know, consequently, it has kind of driven my interest to do something and also give back along the way. You know, I see so many times that, you know, when I say we as an American, you know, we go someplace that's beautiful and just gorgeous, you know, as far as the physical environment, but something about the people and mystique about the land is hard to put your finger on, but it usually is because the people are so just gracious and uncommonly just open, you know, with their lives, and that's the draw for me. And so, you know, we have, along with developing this property and you know, with the intent that, hey, it's a business for us, but, you know, what goes along with that and intruding into these villagers' lives is, you know, this is their land and you need to give back. And so along with that, we have, you know, it was known to us that we would create jobs, which is a given, but also, you know, building roads and bringing electricity to areas that didn't have it for the local people. Was a great thing, you know, for us to be able to do as well. We built a small school where we teach the local kids English, and that has been a really good feeling, good give back project for us down there. So, Yeah, you know, the adventure of doing things in a foreign land is something that's really exciting for me, and I think for my family as well. But building these relationships with these people in the area, in these areas, and even outlying areas from where we are, there's it's quite interesting. There's a town up in the hills above our project, Playa Loma Bonita. It's called Alpuyeque, and it's an enclave of Mexicans, but the villagers up there, and it's about 3 or 4 miles, you know, straight up these hills. It's an enclave of Mexicans who are all green eyed and fair skinned and light haired, and it's a remnants of the French army who were here to conquer Mexico as well. And they were soldiers that decided that they weren't going to leave. And so, you know, just little jewels like this, finding out these things when you do these kind of adventurous projects and get into the culture is something that's extremely stimulating to me. So that's one way that, you know, I look at if I'm going to do something someplace, it's not about, hey, can I build this? How much money can I make? And it's all about that bottom line at the end of the day. Now it's about the journey. It's about the relationships. It's just really, I think, I wish more of guys like me would look at doing things this way when they're in someone else's, you know, backyard, when they're in someone else's country. It needs to be respected more, I think.
Okay. Now, what would you say to someone who is currently going through some adversity? What advice would you or could you give them?
You know, I think the most important thing is, you know, so many times when you grow up in a difficult situation, you just think that there's absolutely no way out. And you know, not the case, and it's hard to believe that when you're in it. Certainly when you're a young child, I think you have to bide your time. You have to, you know, to grow, to understand what your options are. But, you know, there's always a way out, and there will be. I mean, after you've gone through the brunt of a very difficult situation, things will get better. And I think I think a lot of times, you know, kids in a very difficult situation will feel like it's never going to get better, or they can't get out of this terrible situation that they're in. You know, it's a beautiful thing of nature to watch someone, you know, really figure out how to make their situation better and actually do it. It takes a lot of guts, and it takes a lot of just determination. But it will happen. You just have to believe that. You have to have hope. Believe that you can make a difference.
Now, also, what would you say to someone who's thinking of starting a business at this time?
Just go and do it with your eyes wide open. And you have to understand when you're going into an endeavor of starting your own business that there's going to be a lot of things that you're not going to understand until you cross that new issue or circumstance that you put yourself in. So starting your own business is a scary thing. It's something that if you're not committed to, it probably won't work out. It's no different than a relationship. If you're not 100% into it, it's probably going to fall apart. So if you're going to do it, make sure you've crossed your T's and dotted your I's and have done as much research as that you can. Have looked for people who have done it before and have been successful, and just grab onto whatever advice that you can, you know, that you can garner from these individuals, and listen. Just make yourself listen to these individuals, because you will hit obstacles that you'll have no idea where it came from or how to deal with it. And if you're listening to individuals, older guys, older girls who've been through it, they'll give you these little morsels of knowledge that you'll hit these roadblocks and you'll think back and you'll reflect and be able to say, okay, this is one of those points. I get it. I understand that this is something that needs to be dealt with and thought through. And the word that everybody uses today, we used to use, used to be common to say, you need to take a different angle or reassess the direction that your company is going in. And today's world, and it's a beautiful, hugely emerging sector of business that we're in right now, which is the startup or the entrepreneurial game right now. It's a lot of youth, but a lot of just young minds who are going out and striking out on their own endeavors and making some crazy strides, beautiful crazy strides in business today. And so I think you just have to, you have to have an open mind. You have to listen and just be smart, and it will work. You've got to persevere. You've got to take your knocks. Everybody will take their hits when they're starting their own business, but that's when you have to understand. You have to figure out, how do I pivot and take that right next step? And that's the word that is very common in today's world. You need to understand what your next pivot is, whether it's raising your next block of money, whether it's pushing your company in a different direction, whether it's changing your product to suit what you now know is your market. So it's a fascinating thing to start and succeed in your own business.
Great. Now, when you wrote your book, what was your hopes when writing this book?
It kind of evolved a few different ways. Initially, I had a crazy brother who just got into trouble. It seemed around every corner was just trouble and mayhem, and so a lot of it were funny stories. A lot of them were stories that I was involved in and that weren't funny, that were traumatic. But I just thought, God, how can one crazy life go on and on and on and keep going? And so after I sold my company in 2007, now this is one of the reasons, mind you, I just started writing stories about Bill, my brother, and I had probably written, I don't know, 400 or 500, 600 pages of stories, but a lot of the stories were excerpts about, what my perception of it was, what my life was, how it related to these stories. And so eventually I started turning this, this writing into, these are messages that people need to understand. And so I felt like, hey, this is really evolving into something that is more a message about, life, some of the cards that you're dealt, which are not the best cards in the world, but they're your cards, and you just have to deal with them, however best you can. And so it was kind of an evolution of, kind of a, this is an interesting take on a person I grew up with, to a my life story and a flushing of my emotional trauma just pouring out onto the pages, to hey this this is really these challenges that you face in your life, in your young life, in your midlife, in your older life. It's all about, and it's all, you know, similar to just facing challenges, and that's what starting your own business is all about, is facing challenges. And so it was interesting how this whole thing has evolved, and the book ties right in with you know, what I'm currently doing, which is, you know, just continuing to set up these challenges to face. It feels normal to me. It feels right. And how that relates to our environment today, and all these young kids who come out of school that basically come out into a scorched economic environment. They're striking out in huge numbers and starting their own businesses, their own challenges, and it's a very exciting. It's a hugely important time, I think, in our history.
Oh, great. Now, I know that I was able to get the book at Barnes & Noble. Where can people find your book?
You know what? It's on Amazon. If you go to my website, wrongsideofthetracksbook.com, wrongsideofthetracksbook.com, you can it'll have a button to go to Amazon. You can get it at Amazon in a, you know, hard book or a in Kindle form, and that's the primary means of acquiring the book at this point.
And if people wanted to contact you to I guess ask you questions or find out more about you, how can they do that?
You know, totally available. Whether it's you know, a business interest or you know, purely to talk about the book or challenge, I'm available through my website, wrongsideofthetracksbook.com, or through my company, realpopcenters.com. And we've got a blog on each of those websites, or you know, you can reach me at my my email, which is available.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, all of a sudden it got real quiet.
I know, I heard I heard an airplane on that side.
Yes, sure. Yes. Yeah. So what did you say? Did the realofficecenters.com, that's a website that you have as well.
Yeah, realofficecenters.com. We go by the acronym ROC, R-O-C. But if you go to that website, you'll get a really good idea of what we're doing to give back to the startup community and providing, you know, a platform for startup, small young companies to be able to understand where they need to take their company to, how to attract capital, and to really, you know, partner up with we're partnering with a lot of the major universities here on the West Coast, like USC and UCLA and Chapman College, so we've got a lot of really useful, very applicable information and mentoring for anybody who's looking at starting up their own company.
Well, that sounds great, great, great. Now, I just want to say thank you so much for, you know, taking the time out to sit with us and discuss your book and just discuss your whole perspective on life in general. It was very enlightening.
That's great. And thank you very much as well. I'm just very appreciative that you felt like it was noteworthy enough to have on your show.
Most definitely. We do a few things. We have like a motivational show. We also have a real estate show as well. And this kind of ties in with those two things because, you know, you got to have the right mind to be able to achieve things. And so this is just like right in line with everything that we're doing.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, it's one and the same. I mean, it's whether it's a challenge in a personal life or a challenge in a business, it's it all works the same way. So.
And if, you know, in the future you want to come on our real estate show, you're more than welcome.
I'd love to.
Okay. That would be great. That would be excellent. So what I do, I have you all of your information, and what I'll do is I'll keep in contact with you.
Okay, appreciate that. And, yeah, just give me a heads up whenever you want me to get involved.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for joining us. To all my listeners, that's Ron McElroy. He wrote a book called Wrong Side of the Tracks. And we just are so glad that you were able to join us, and thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay, have a good one.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, everyone, that is our show for today, and we would like to thank our Mr. McElroy for joining us. I would also like to thank my listeners for your continued support, and just say, you know, there are options and opportunities out there for everything that you want to do. You just have to just stay strong and stay focused. Believe that you can do it because you can. It's all within you. Please join us next Saturday when we'll have a Real Estate Straight Talk. I believe that we may do the time a little bit differently. It may not be at 12:30. It may be a little bit later in the day. However, I'll keep you informed and let you know exactly what's going on as it transpires. We're also going to come back to you on the 19th with Paradigm Shifters, Principles for Life and Success with Steve Duncanson and Marilyn Ocasio-Medina. And You, the Best Invention Ever will be the last segment that we do on the last Saturday of the month for that month. There may be some other shows that may come in between that time. However, I'll keep you posted. I'm going to have the website updated as soon as possible so that you can know what shows are coming up soon. Thank you again, and have an amazing, wonderful, beautiful day, week, and till we speak again. Goodbye.
That's our show for today. So until next time, keep it real, listen, learn, and live.